This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas. Presented by U Mobile.
Welcome to The Breakfast Grill. I'm Roshan Kanesan. Over the last few years, esports has been gaining more traction, with the industry reportedly generating $1 billion in revenue for the first time last year. And although COVID-19 presents a stumbling block for 2020, the esports industry as a whole is expected to continue growing in the longer term. Today, I explore the state of esports in Malaysia and the challenges ahead with Tommy Cheng, co-founder and COO of C-Gamer Mall, an online digital platform for gamers, and Kevin Wong, CEO of Wolf Esports and owner of the brand and professional team Yudu Gang. Gents, welcome to the show.
Hello, Roshan.
Hello, everybody. Hi.
So before we get into the state of esports in Malaysia, Kevin, let's start with you. Could you tell us a bit about Wolf and Yudu Gang? What's your role in the sports ecosystem?
Okay, so Wolf Esports, we are a esports management company that is based in Malaysia. Ideally, in a layman's way to put it out, we fulfill all pillars and vertical of the esports business, from team management to talent agency work to marketing and advertising, and also to manage and own teams. And last of all, also we are involved in part of like events and broadcasting and stuff like that.
Right, and how many teams do you represent at this point?
We have about 5 professional teams in the highest tier and a couple more on the second, third tier.
Now, C-Gamer Mall, or more commonly known as CGM, is a Malaysian-made regional platform for video games that's been around for about 13 years at this point. So from your vantage point, Tommy, tell us how gaming has picked up in Malaysia over the last decade.
Over the last decade, gaming has been popular all this while. But of course, when you look at the gaming evolution, it evolves from the PC games, then to the web games, and then it was back to the PC games, and console game came about when they launched the online games where you can play with other people online. Then, of course, currently is the trend where the mobile games is super popular. Why it is so? It is because in the past, people have to go to cyber cafe to play games, or because they can't own a good PC to play 3D games. But now with affordable phones, and especially in developing countries like Malaysia, Indonesia, and others in the region, mobile games just explode, because every kid can have a few hundred bucks phone and then they can play the games.
So what you've basically illustrated there is that, you know, gaming has significantly changed over the last 10, 20 years, in fact, from just being on the PC to now being on our tiny devices in our pockets. But this year, the year has been all about COVID-19 and the impact of the pandemic on various industries out there. A few weeks ago, I was speaking to Riot Games, or at least Riot Games Southeast Asia, and they've had to significantly move things around, have to delay some events, because live events play such a big role in the esports ecosystem. From your view, Tommy, how has the industry been impacted by the pandemic?
Frankly speaking, with the lockdowns and whatnot, COVID actually pushes the gaming industry, at least for my company. And if you also you look at the last quarter report by Tencent, NetEase, and other big developers, they are making huge loads of money because gamers are staying at home. The likelihood of them spending, especially for free-to-play games, where you need to buy games, seasonal passes and whatnot, they are more likely to spend. And during the past 4 months, I think some has grown like a double. Some developers have grown double. And for myself, my company, we have grown like 30-40% during this period.
Those are some significant numbers there, Tommy. Congrats. Kevin, let's talk about your side. So you bring a team view and really a more on-the-ground view of what's happening to the teams directly. What are you seeing?
I guess for starters, people in the general public needs to understand a bit more like the life of these gamers, professional gamers. It is in somewhat true that these players themselves, because the nature of their work is always behind a screen or behind a device, so their practices and all, it's in a way they can do it remotely because of the connectivity we have in hand right today. But like any other companies, any other industry, COVID has obviously taken a big toll to like esports teams as well. Though the toll is not as bad as generic industries, but like the restrictions they feel on ground will be like teams are having a problem to train per se. But that being said, they are still able to train digitally, and with the technological involvement and the way we are right now in the world, it's not as bad as it will happen like a couple years back, right? So the direct impact to esports athlete and talents, I would say it did not really affect them too much.
Right. And, you know, when we talk about esports, it's often seen as one homogeneous business, but it's actually very fragmented. There are many genres and game types, and generally one esports player doesn't play multiple types of games. To put that into some kind of context here, that would be like expecting Cristiano Ronaldo to be able to play basketball at the same level that he would play football. So with that in mind, I want to get into what are the titles that we can compare to the likes of the EPL or the NBA or even F1 in the esports world. Kevin, can we start with you?
I think the beauty about like esports world, right, it's not unlike the traditional sports whereby one sport they have that final govern to it, whereby like say for basketball it's the NBA, for the football it would be FIFA. So esports in a way it is somewhat similar, but there is not one massive restriction to that. But because of that, there is not one there's not one Olympics per se for esports. So that's the thing to it, right? Every title, massive title out there, example, like you mentioned earlier, Riot Games, they own League of Legends per se. So League of Legends, they have their own ecosystem behind it. And of course, at the top tier for League of Legends, there is the Worlds, right? So that's like the World Cup for League of Legends. Like for Dota, they have the International. That's like their own version of the World Cup, the pinnacle of that particular game in hand. So I think the easier way for layman to put at it is like esports is the competitive video gaming, right? That's the competitive sector of any video gaming. So like, I guess another way to put it is like everyone that plays football is not really considered a footballer or football player, but when you are competing at the highest tier, whether it's a state level, regional level, or even like FIFA, then you are considered a football player, right?
So in a way, there are just multiple leagues happening all over the place, and there are different owners of different leagues, there are different people behind and running all these different games. So it is a very fragmented market. So let's say you pick League of Legends, right? And that's the specialty you go into. I don't expect Cristiano Ronaldo later on to play basketball, right? Not all of us, yep, as Michael Jordan, can jump from basketball to baseball in the middle of your career. Is that the same for esports?
Yes.
Tommy, when we take a look from your view, what are some of the biggest, most popular games in the world right now?
The biggest, I mean, in terms of games, there are lots of them because different gamers or different people, they play different games. But if you look at the competitive scene of esports, then of course you have the top two, which is Dota and League of Legends. It's super huge for Dota globally. It's super huge for LOL globally, but also particularly in China. China and also the Chinese-speaking market like Taiwan, Macau, Hong Kong, all these are League of Legends based. And of course, they have also the Korean. But in terms of mobile games, nowadays, then you can look at three main games, PUBG Mobile, Mobile Legends, and also the Free Fire, where, you know, Garena has this Free Fire game where they are super popular in quite a lot of region, and especially South America.
And what about in Malaysia, Tommy? Do you have any data for us in terms of some of the most popular or the most popular games in this country?
Most popular games in terms of mobile nowadays definitely is still two of the top games that I mentioned just now, PUBG Mobile and also Mobile Legends. But there are still a huge following for Dota and League of Legends.
And when we take a look at the esports tournaments, now, they largely depend on the publishers, the developers, or maybe some third parties, but I think most of the big ones are run by the publishers themselves. So that means they're directly running the tournament or they've licensed it out, which makes them essentially the gatekeepers of the business at this point, if you want to play in the biggest, at the biggest level at the very least. Does this put too much power in the controls of the publishers?
Okay, so in the end, I think the major difference within like traditional sports and like say esports, right? I think the major difference, like, we cannot really pinpoint down to one particular party that says that, hey, I own football or I own the concept, right? I've licensed over these particular sports. Traditional sports, they implement a franchise model, come down to it, whereby we have the likes of FIFA, NBA, NFL, and that's to the furthest that they can actually control the game, right? So with esports, the game publishers or developers, they are the one that owns the game. They are the one that designed the game. They are the one that put the game out for the public. And at the end, they own the full right. They, if whatever proprietary information or technology they have, that it's all owned by them. So to answer that, I think I wouldn't call them as gatekeepers, but in the end, these are the people that own the game directly, right? So they spend their money to develop the game. There is no wrong, I feel, that like in the developers themselves controlling their game, how the outcome.
Yeah. Tommy, what about you? Do you have anything to add to that?
I think it's fair enough for the game developers to own the game because, like Kevin said, they spend the money, they spend the time to develop and design the game. But of course, a lot of people would say, hey, you know, esports is still a sport, and then the game publishers or developers should not like have the ultimate right to do that. But frankly speaking, esports or the games are all commercial stuff. So you can't deny the rights of the developers and publishers to run their own way.
I'm speaking with Tommy Cheng, co-founder of C Gamer Mall, and Kevin Wong, CEO of Wolf Esports. Up next, does esports need a governing body? Stay tuned to The Breakfast Grill to find out.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U Mobile.
Welcome back to The Breakfast Grill. I'm Roshan Kunnison. Today, I'm exploring the state of esports in Malaysia with Tommy Cheng, co-founder of C Gamer Mall, and Kevin Wong, CEO of Wolf Esports. Now, considering the growing yet fragmented nature of esports, does the industry need a governing body?
I think, as I mentioned in previous interviews and articles about that, is that, you know, a governing body should be a body that supports the development of esports as a whole, right? So they should be like promoting, like for example, Malaysia could have a body like ESM who should be promoting the scene in Malaysia, the infrastructure, great infrastructure that we have, the great teams that we have, and great ecosystem that we have, so that we can attract more big game publishers and developers to run their tournaments, run their events, or even let our stakeholders in the industry to produce the content, to run initiative for them. And I think Malaysia has fantastic talents to do that. And besides that, I don't think a governing body could or can put too much control into the industry because, like I said previously, it is something private. No, it's not a public thing. So, but of course, the government or governing body could help in terms of, for example, protecting the esports player, protecting how the tournaments are run, so to make sure that, you know, whenever there's tournament run by third party and not the big developers themselves, they pay out the prize money in a timely manner. Because in the past, we have cases or tournaments where, you know, prize money won't pay out, and ultimately the third party company that runs the tournament go out of business, and then, you know, the players who put the effort into playing the game, joining the tournament, winning the tournament, and ended up with nothing.
Kevin, do you have anything to add to what Tommy said there?
I mean, there's always two ways to look at it. I don't think it's wrong for every country to have a regulatory body, but it's just about, like, I personally feel like if any association federations out there, they're supposed to be like the middle ground, right, for the netizens, the people, and also the government, and also the game publishers itself. I think that's the general rule of thumb, whereby, like, it's hard for normal people to get, like, if they want to, say, example, there's something on with the particular game, whereby it's regarding to a team or regarding to a smaller league, and the players or the people in hand here wants to reach out to game publishers, example. And it's hard. It's hard for normal people to reach out to game publishers, developers. But when, if we have a governing body in hand, that's what their role is supposed to be, right? To be the middle ground. And I think that's all that it should be within these esports.
While we're on this note, the Malaysia Electronic Sports Federation, which was formerly known as Esports Malaysia Association, recently announced a 140 million ringgit partnership with Dynasty Esports Malaysia Sdn Bhd to create an official national esports platform for Malaysia. Now, this is quite a sizable partnership. And while a national esports league was already in the works last year, was this particular partnership with Dynasty surprising to you?
Yeah. it is a bit surprising. Personally, I never heard about it. I only know about it through social media, like everyone else, I reckon. So,
Tommy, what about you? Have you heard of Dynasty before this?
No, but frankly speaking, I'm a curious person. I did some digging. Frankly speaking, this company, nobody has heard of them, and then suddenly it pops up. But from what I heard from industry people and whatnot, I talked to some people. So essentially what they're trying to create here is some sort of gatekeeper, which I think it is counterproductive. I wouldn't say it is something that is going to work, because like we discussed so far, ultimately the game itself, the tournament itself, especially the top tiers, are all controlled by the game publishers. So essentially, what they are trying to do is just like a third party trying to like get into the scene and then, you know, maybe make some money. I don't know.
Right. You know, a lot of the times when we talk about esports, we talk about how much money it's making, and it's gaining a lot of popularity and eyeballs, and with that, sponsorship dollars. Now, when we talk about these billion-dollar businesses or these billion-dollar numbers, these are global numbers. So realistically, though, how much of that actually plays into the Malaysian economy, considering that there are much bigger and more established markets like South Korea or China or even the US, for that matter?
I think this... it's very subjective. I guess, like, you know, it requires a bit of digging to put out exactly how much number. I mean, you need to check the census report of actually how much of this amount is coming in the country. But I think I dare safe to say that, right, whatever number that's being projected for Malaysia, at least, it is growing. And whatever number is out there, it is not a wrong number to put at it. There could be people, of course, like inflating numbers here and there. But ideally, I think the rule of thumb here is like, if you have a good business model within esports, you'll definitely be able to put in that kind of investment or put the kind of money. But again, this numbers bit, it's always very subjective to say like how much is it coming in here and whatnot. I would say that it requires a lot of digging, right?
Right. So what are the, for an esports team or an esports company, what are some of the main revenue drivers for you?
Okay, so like obviously one of the main revenue driver is a proper sponsorship deal. That's one. The few other things to put it highlight out there that is a bit substantial as well. There's something called the like broadcasting contractual deal, like streaming deals. You know, like talents broadcasting their games on specific platform. That kind of deal brings in a quite heavy amount as well. But that ideally falls under the term of sponsorship as well. Now, so if sponsorship brings in a good 50%, the other 50% revolves around like merchandising, revolves around like small campaigning work. Again, it could be derived as sponsorship, but it could be derived as standard marketing involvement jobs, merchandising again, events even, and the other small bits or sectors within this whole esports are. But definitely sponsorship brings in a heavy amount of it.
Right. So it sounds like any other traditional sport, right? The sponsorship is the bulk of the money that comes in. Yes, there's merchandising. Yes, there's ticket sales. There's live events and all of that. But really, the parallels are quite clear there. Right. And Tommy, when we take a look from your perspective here, and when we look at all the money that's being generated in the esports industry, how does Malaysia rank in there? How big of a player is the country overall in the esports ecosystem?
I think we are still pretty small in terms of that globally. Even regionally, we are still lagging behind countries like Indonesia or Thailand or even Philippines. One of the reasons is because, you know, like we discussed earlier, what Kevin said is that the bulk of the money is coming from sponsorship. So when you look at Malaysia as a market, look at Thailand, in terms of population, those countries has a much bigger population. And from what I have been observing for the past couple of years, 2-3 years, is that, you know, companies in Malaysia are still not utilizing or even looking into esports as a channel, as a marketing channel for that brand. But for us, CG Momo, we have been like putting in some money, sponsorship money in in a few teams. In the past, Team Cyan, which was a change to AirAsia Cyan when AirAsia bought into the company. And of course, now Yudu Gang, where we also sponsorship a long-term one-year deal. And as a company, because we are involved in the gaming business, of course, this is something, a natural extension where we going to reach out to our customers and potential customers. But as a whole, Malaysia businesses, I would say, we really need to like have more education, or let them see the numbers that, you know, it is a viable marketing channel for your brand, for their brand and whatnot. Because if you look at the, if you ever have a chance to look at a PUBG Mobile World League, or even in the PMPL C region, you can see whenever a Malaysian team playing, right, or a stream that is in Malay, you know, we have the one of the highest viewership in the region. And I think that's a best great chance for brands to reach out to young esports viewers.
And in November last year, then Youth and Sports Minister Syed Saddiq Abdul Rahman unveiled the strategic plan for esports development 2020 to 2025. Now, although the government has changed and we have a new sports minister, what I want to ask is, the blueprint aimed to turn Malaysia into an esports hub in Southeast Asia. What does it mean to be a hub? Tommy, could we start with you?
To be an esports hub, it covers a lot of things. Of course, you know, you need to have a vibrant esports community. You need to have a lot of or even successful esports organization, and of course you need to have good and capable esports tournament organizers and whatnot. I mean, even big companies like ESL from Europe, they came to Malaysia and set up shop to run events and tournaments in the region. But Malaysia, we have some very good companies that is doing that. But what I hope to see is that, you know, a lot of times, whatever initiative it is, we need to involve the actual stakeholders to get involved in all this. Because what I've been seeing for the past couple of years, frankly speaking, those people who are so-called involved in, you know, trying to come up with all these guidelines, plans and whatnot, mostly, I wouldn't say all, are not esports industry stakeholders, but mostly are non-esports or even gaming stakeholders.
Kevin, do you have anything to add to that? What does it mean to make Malaysia a hub in terms of from an esports player's point of view?
Yeah, I think like Mr. Tommy actually explained most of it, but in probably the only other thing, to a very layman way to put it out to the world, is like esports hub is whereby we can host the biggest tier of tournaments. Like example, if there is a whatever tournament game, example whereby the Southeast Asia bracket needs to be hosted a physical event, hopefully that within like the Southeast Asia region, it will be hosted in Malaysia. And see, Malaysia, we are not a big country, but we definitely have one of the top infrastructure in terms of the capacity to host a very fantastic event.
So I guess the equivalent there would be hosting the Olympics in a certain country. That's that kind of, yep, that's the, yep, dynamic we're looking at here. On that note, I'd like to thank both of you for joining me today.
All right. Thank you so much, Roshan. Thank you for having us.
I've been speaking with Tommy Cheng, co-founder and COO of CGM, and Kevin Wong, CEO of Wolf Sports and owner of Yudu Gang. And this has been The Breakfast Grill. I'm Roshan Kanesan for BFM 89.9.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U-Mobile, unleashing unlimited potential every day.